from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the 2001 hit film Monsoon Wedding has been reimagined as a musical, playing now at Berklee Repertory Theater. Filmmaker Mira Nair shot the low-budget movie in a month, which soon became an indie classic. Nair's credits include Queen of Katwe, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, and Mississippi Masala. She joins us to talk about why her story of an Indian family preparing to celebrate an arranged marriage still resonates. And we'll get her thoughts on love, family, and tradition in the modern age after this news. Join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. And joining us is the award-winning filmmaker Mira Nair. The adaptation of her hit film Monsoon Wedding into a musical is now at Berklee Repertory Theater. And for those who might not be familiar with the story, Monsoon Wedding is about an upper-middle-class family in Delhi preparing to celebrate the arranged marriage of the only daughter to an Indian-American man. Extended family is flying in for the event. There are a whole lot of family dynamics to navigate, as well as some dark and difficult secrets. Mira Nair, welcome to Forum.
Lovely to be here. Thank you, Mina.
Thank you for being here. And tonight is opening night.
That's right. Put your bells on and your dancing shoes should be shined.
Yes, it is. It is a very joyous and ebullient play that does involve the audience, and it will run a week longer than originally planned. Is that right?
I believe so. I think I've heard that there are no tickets to be had, and it's extended before it's opened. So yes, it's opening. It's going on till July 2nd at Berklee Repertory Theater.
Why do you think it is so popular with audiences? Monsoon Wedding was more than 15 years ago, the film. Why is this story resonating today?
You know, Monsoon Wedding, the way Sabrina Dhawan, the writer, and myself, you know, conceived of it right from the beginning, was about the madness of and the affection, really, in our Punjabi lives. We are both North Indian Punjabis. We are known as the kind of party animals of India. And it is not just a reflection of the upper middle class, but it's also equally about the working class who Yes. we live cheek by jowl with. And in making this construction of two sets of lovers, both the tent man and who falls in love with the maid of the house, and the upper middle class bride who chooses to have an arranged marriage with a young man from New Jersey. Both sets of this world are actually about the unbroken line of family. And we all are part of families. And I've always believed in all my films and in the play that the more specifically local and authentic one is to one's own identity and culture, actually the more universal something can become, because people recognize themselves and their own families in the Varma family of Monsoon Wedding. So that, I think, was why the film was so successful and also just kept playing and playing. People did not see it just once. They saw it an average of a few times. And already I meet people who come to the musical who have tickets for next Friday and the Friday after, and it kind of dazzles me. But I think it's people are also desiring to be lifted. It is a spectacularly difficult time in our world. And Monsoon Wedding has this wonderful recipe of what we call masti, which is a Hindi word, which means the intoxication with life. And truly, the family and the actors and the incredible divine music that lifts us up is an antidepressant, and people not just see themselves in the story of this family, recognize even in the secrets and the darkness that comes with our story, that these are human endeavors. You know, love is not always a beautiful thing. It can be a twisted thing. And this is the human world. I mean, this is what happens in life, and nothing is actually more powerful than the extraordinariness of human beings and life. And I think in Monsoon Wedding, the musical, like in the film, we have managed to capture that alchemy.
It's when you talk about people needing to be lifted up, one of the things, so I had the privilege of being able to see this in previews and before our interview today, and I was struck immediately by, as soon as the play, the musical opened, the smiles on people's faces around me, the moment it began, really, I think, spoke to what you were able to capture and create from the outset of the musical. Now, theater has very different requirements than film. What opportunities did turning this film into a musical do for you creatively and also for the story?
Well, theater is actually a home for me. I began before I was a filmmaker. I was an actor in India, in Delhi and Kolkata, as part of a repertory company from the age of, say, 16 to 18, 19. I performed and I felt intuitively happy on stage. I came to this country to be an actor, and then life has what it does, and it took me into the realm of filmmaking when I was about 20 years old. But still, I have been nourished by the theater, and to come back and conceive of Monsoon Wedding as a musical for the stage, even though it was the first time I'm directing on stage, it's a way, funnily, like coming home, you know. Of course, I've surrounded myself with, you know, people and collaborators who take me further. Vishal Bhardwaj, the extraordinary music composer of Monsoon Wedding, the musical, is an old friend from Bombay and a great music maker as well as a filmmaker. Sabrina Dhawan, the writer of the film, is also the writer of the play. And Susan Birkenhead is a veteran lyricist from Broadway who has worked with us. So we are... We've been actually at this for close to 9 years before this night of opening tonight, and it's a very exciting time of fruition. You know, the principles of narrative, the principles of making drama that is accessible to people is, I would say, foundationally, if there is a word like that, the same, both in film and in theater. Mm-hmm. But what's been wonderful in the theater for me is... the kind is sort of what I call the ecstasy of the ephemeral. The fact that we all make a piece of work very much collaboratively to create a moment on stage that will always be unique and never happen again. Tomorrow, the performance might be quite different than it is today. And I love the fact, I love the zen of that. I love the idea of creating something that is only about the present. That is, for me, one of the greater excitements. But otherwise, it's been a sort of extraordinary kind of interweaving of hands and hearts to make something that we hope has the potential of making you in the audience be transported, and also to a world that in which you recognize yourself, to a world in which we are, as Indians, not the other, you know, like the world would have you believe, you know. Currently in the world, there are so many walls being built between one culture and another, or one way of understanding or belief and another. And what we do in Monsoon Wedding is lift those walls and you know, create real, I think, bridges, but bridges of understanding, but ultimately joy, because it's human. It's about being human and being one.
We're talking with filmmaker, director Meera Nair, who's turned the screen hit film Monsoon Wedding into a musical that's playing at Berklee Repertory Theater. Her films also include Mississippi Masala, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, Salaam Bombay. Monsoon Wedding won a Golden Lion Award. Her production company is Mirabai Films. Her recent movie, Queen of Katwe, is about a chess champion from Uganda. I'd like to invite our listeners actually to join the conversation. I'm going to open the phone lines early because I have a sense that many people would like to talk with you. The phone number for Forum is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook or Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. Your mention of talking about Indians as not the other reminds me also of what you said about Ugandans and doing the film Queen of Katwe, that our modern sense of Africa is nothing like the reality in Africa. What did you mean by that?
Well, you get, in the Western world especially, or really anywhere, there are very few images or stories told from the African continent, especially hardly ever told from within the continent, always told from outside it, where the African people, whether it's Ugandan or specifically to anywhere, are hardly ever shown at all. It's the continent is a backdrop for usually for, you know, white people's neurosis in some way, or people going on a safari in some way. You know, it's very marginal to what we actually do there, how we live there.
And I should remind listeners that you live in Uganda. You also live in New York and you live in India. You split your time.
That's right. That's right. I have lived in Uganda now 27 years since I made my second film, Mississippi Masala, there, which was about the Asian expulsion by Idi Amin in 1972 with Denzel Washington and so on. So I have fell in love there and married there and gave birth there. And Uganda is very much my home, as well as the fact that I live in New York and Delhi. And, you know, it was such a wonderful and necessary privilege to be able to make Queen of Katwe, which was shot like 15 minutes from where I live in all directions, to be able to consolidate those 27 years of feeling at home in this amazing place of Kampala, Uganda, and to tell a true story of Fiona Mutesi, a 11-year-old girl who lived in a slum 15 minutes from where I live, who one day discovered how to play chess.
She was illiterate.
Yeah, used bottle caps and became pretty much a candidate master at the age of 12 without knowing how to read or write. And her story is one that is real, but also about a community that makes her the champion that she becomes. It's not an individual tale of one person who rises from rags to riches. You know, it's about her mother, her teacher, her coach, the gang around her who don't even know what this game could yield, but believe that there is a possibility of going further in life. And that's what I loved about Queen of Katwe, that it was not just one person's tale, but it was a tale of many of us who live in that everyday dignity and struggle as well of Kampala life. And
it is. It's a difficult story in terms of the fact that she has a very difficult life. And it's not that those difficulties go away once she becomes the Queen of Katwe, when she becomes somebody who masters chess. You worked with Disney on this film. What was it like to work with Disney on also a hard story?
It was remarkable that Disney, the biggest studio in the world that is known for, you know, animation films largely, asked me, actually. They came to see me in Kampala. The vice president of Disney is a Ugandan-born wonderful guy called Tendo Nagenda, who had found this story of Fiona Mutesi in a sports journal and came to see me in my garden there and said, you know, would you like to make this film? And I immediately said, I want to meet Fiona. And once I met her, it was a big resounding yes, because I loved her humility and her self-effacingness, and we shared a lot because we were both sort of local, Ugandans, and I loved her, basically her fire and her grace and her self-possessedness. But Disney was remarkably respectful. And what I love about Queen of Katwe is that it's my voice. It's an independent film told the way I would tell my own films, Mississippi Masala or Monsoon Wedding or The Namesake, or films in which no one tampers with what I want to say, you know. And that was remarkable, to make that with a studio. Usually they get involved very, very much. And in this case, they were deeply engaged with it, but also incredibly respectful about the reality and the grit and even the poetry of what they were seeing. You know, I jokingly say that this is the first film that Disney has ever made about Africa without a single animal in it.
We're talking with Meera Nair, director and filmmaker. She has just turned her hit film Monsoon Wedding into a musical that's playing at Berklee Repertory Theater. And we're talking about her latest film from Disney called Queen of Katwe. You also mentioned the film Mississippi Masala a little bit ago. And this was a film that you made earlier on in your career. And we actually have a clip from it that I would like to play just to give our listeners a sense of your films, who may not be familiar with them, and This is from Mississippi Masala. It's a clip that has a character named Mina and another character named Demetrius, actually played by Denzel Washington, who are walking along the beach reflecting on their status in the U.S.
I ain't no saint. I mean, we got a good business. And no reason to leave. This is a new Mississippi. I like it here.
It's not where I live. You know how many people come to our motel? They look at us. They say, not another goddamn Indian. It makes me so mad.
Yeah. Well, Ms. Masala, racism, or as they say nowadays, tradition, it's passed down like recipes. Now, the trick is you got to know what to eat and what to leave on your plate. Otherwise, you'll be mad forever.
And you'll never eat.
You'll never eat. That's right.
That was from Mississippi Masala. And it references earlier what you were saying about Indian families ousted from their homes in Uganda by Idi Amin. And that was her family, the character Mina that you heard there in that clip.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Asians in Uganda are often third generation, like my own husband's family. His great-grandfather came from Gujarat, from Western India, on dhows, on boats, you know, to Zanzibar, to the east coast of Africa, became traders, became shopkeepers and several other things. So it was absolutely startling that after all these generations calling Uganda their home and not knowing any other, that one day Idi Amin announces that in 90 days all Asians must leave the country. And they had to. So that was, and they fled to several places, but they, oddly enough, by a trick of history, came, a lot of Ugandan Asians came to Mississippi to buy motels and run family businesses. You know, and that was one of these extraordinary things that happened, that you can hardly almost find an American-owned motel in the South, you know. So I pursued that story of what is home for those who have never, for the Asians who have never known India or Pakistan or the subcontinent from which their ancestors came, regarded Uganda or Africa as home, who come to Mississippi, the birthplace of the civil rights of African-American community, who have also never known Africa or any place that they have come from originally as theirs. What happens when these two cultures cross the borders and get to know each other?
When you thread through so many different worlds and cultures, as you do in part by all the travel that you do, but also by living in three different places in a year, you really get to see the essentials of the human experience, I feel like, because there are so many things that are happening all around you culturally, right, that are different, that it's easy to be distracted by. But through the process of interacting in so many different ones, you actually see the thread, like the thing that's stable among humans, even within all these different places, do you think?
I definitely think that that, you know, also as a student of cinema verite, which is like the cinema of truth, of coming from a documentary tradition where my first films and first subjects were really folks on the street, folks, you know, living their lives that I just happened to be witness to, and seeing like nothing is more powerful than truth, you know, much more than fiction sometimes. And what I've tried to do in my work is to marry the electricity and unpredictability of everyday life and human beings as they live through this with the drama or with the electricity of making fiction of this truth. And definitely living in several, you know, several places sort of creates a worldview that is much more expansive and not just referencing one kind of mainstream culture. So if you go to, say, in East Africa, the stars of America make no sense at all. We are not into the tabloid culture. We are not into, you know, what is famous here is meaningless there. And that's beautiful. That's humbling. And you know, so you're not subscribing to one way of looking at the world.
Mississippi Masala, like many of your films, also has a real sensuality to it. And one of the things that I've noticed is that you are very willing to put forward women's sexuality in ways that I don't see in a lot of other films, where the women's sexuality is just as upfront, it's just as nuanced as the male characters. Is that a deliberate decision that you made?
Everything is deliberate, Meena. Every single thing is deliberate in making work. And yes, I mean, I am firstly someone who really is a lifeist, someone who believes in all aspects of living and sensuality, whether it comes in the way of using color or in the way of being sexual or in the rules that are associated with what one is allowed to express and what one shouldn't. These are all political questions, actually. And I'm always interested in pushing that envelope and questioning who makes these rules and what is the human spirit yearn for? What does the woman yearn for? We have a number in Monsoon Wedding the musical that just completely brings the house down every night called The Aunties Are Coming. And, you know, it's about women who are past a certain age, you know, 40, 50, who've had their children, whose kids are now getting married, who ask, you know, what about us? You know, don't look at us as empty vessels. You know, we too have life and we too have desire and we too have, you know, longing. And in Indian weddings, especially in Punjabi weddings, there's so many separate events over the 4 days, and many events are women-only events. And this is one such event at the henna where women only get together, get their henna done and get their henna done, basically. And there are songs associated with each of these days. And we made this great song of women, you know, saying, you know, I long for those days when we were full sexual human beings, and wake up, you guys, or wake up everyone, you know, to the aunties who are coming.
Do you think Hollywood or maybe even Bollywood is getting better at showing women's sexuality in this way?
I think it is still an ongoing struggle. You know, in Bollywood is more complicated because for several decades after the British have been in India, our very matter-of-fact attitudes towards sexuality from, say, the 11th century Kama Sutra, where it was very matter of fact what women are supposed to do, what men are, how to interact. All these things were discussed and almost studied and passed down. And then everything changed with the Victorian mores that entered our country, you know, over 100 years of British rule in India, where suddenly there were outsiders and insiders, and women had to be either protected or kept away, and repression came in huge droves. And nothing was on our screens, you know, kissing wasn't allowed, nothing of that sort was allowed. So people found other ways, and sadly, through very twisted versions of rape as one way, you know, the violence, it became very violent, essentially. And I really resented that, both the violence and the coquetry, you know, that you couldn't be direct about any of it. So,
well, let me just let audiences know that we're talking with Meera Nair, filmmaker of Monsoon Wedding and The Reluctant Fundamentalist. You're listening to Forum. I'm Meena Kim, and we're talking with director and filmmaker Meera Nair. Her films include Mississippi Masala, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, The Namesake, and, of course, Monsoon Wedding, which is being reimagined from a screen film to a musical that's playing at Berklee Repertory Theater. And it plays at the Berklee Repertory Theater through July 2nd. We're talking with Meera Nair about her career, about filmmaking, about art. And Carly tweets, I'm truly enjoying this interview. Your films, Mississippi Masala and Queen of Katwe, were brilliant. Let's hear from our listener, Samantha in Berklee. Hi, Samantha.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I first of all, just wanted to thank Meera for putting on the show. I'm such a huge fan of the film. But I wanted to ask her what her experience was like having to cast a group of South Asian actors for this huge Broadway production. What were some of the challenges she faced, or what were the things she was surprised by? I would love to hear more about that.
Samantha, thanks so much. And yes, this was a cast of about 20 people that you that you have for this musical?
It's been a real pleasure and also a challenge. It's taken us about 3 years to cast Monsoon Wedding, the musical, in looking for South Asian actors pretty much across the world who can sing, dance and act on the level of what we are used to on Broadway. And as we well know, if we don't tell our own stories, no one else will. And the fact is that a lot of South Asian actors have never been given the opportunity to be in shows that go to Broadway. You know, in fact, I used to joke that the first day of rehearsals about 2 months ago in Times Square, I used to get off the subway and I would say, all brown people follow me, because really we were the only brown folk of any color and hue that were going to a rehearsal on Broadway, because it's usually pretty much an all white universe. And so it's been wonderful, really, to find the amazing talent and that we have found, mostly from North America, but three of our actors come from Bombay. Javed Jafri, who's a very well-known film actor and stage actor, television actor, who plays Lalit Varma, the father of the bride. Namit Das, who's an extraordinary singer and comic actor, who plays Dubey, the tent man. And Anisha Nagarajan, who plays Alice the maid, who was the one veteran we have from a Broadway show of Bombay Dreams some years ago. But we've also found people who are really appearing on stage for the first time, but with such extraordinary talent and voices and acting. Sharvari Deshpande is a young woman who's studying acting at Columbia University now in New York, but is from Bombay, who plays Ria, the niece, and the young bride and the groom, who have Kuhu Varma and Michael Malakal, who, you know, are, I think that's their first time on stage, but they hold it with such aplomb and such skill with their voices and their performance. So it's been a great, great pleasure to bring the voice, the rhythm, the quality of our culture squarely onto American stages. Not just our culture from India, but also the culture of Indian Americans of America today. So it's been really a wonderful way of bringing our voices and our hearts to the stage.
Thanks, Samantha, for the question. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook or Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. When you talk about bringing and showing Indian culture and Indian American culture, one of the things that people noted when Monsoon Wedding came out in 2001 was the fact that it really was a portrait of globalized India, of the influences of a global world on it. And we have a clip from Monsoon Wedding that I would like to play. It's where the bride-to-be has just admitted to the man that she's engaged to that she's been having an affair. He's upset, and then he comes back to her after he's had some time to reflect.
I really appreciate your telling me about Vikram. You didn't have to, but you did. That honesty means a lot to me. Yeah, I know it's a risk, but what marriage isn't a risk? Now, whether our parents introduce us or whether we meet in a club, what difference does it make? I know we can put this behind us. I believe we can be happy. As for the question of whether we should get married or not, it's really for you to answer.
Talk about the dynamics of their relationship and how it was showing a more modern understanding of relationships in India.
Well, the unique and funny thing is, Indian American guy from New Jersey, you know, dreams of a traditional Indian bride. And when he comes to Delhi for her, she's a 20-year-old who has a history already, you know, and he hardly expects that to happen. But she's fierce and honest enough to, as she says, come clean with her past to him. And, you know, he has to change his notion of the fantasy he had of the unchanged Indian traditional girl, and has to come to terms with you know, this modern living human person, you know, who has maybe messed up in some ways and who has lived life fuller in other ways. And, you know, how do they come together? And that's what life is like. You know, there is no frozen sense of an Indian girl, a good Indian girl who's this way and a guy who, you know, who is in one certain way as well. So it's that. That's what we do on the stage in Monsoon Wedding. The musical is firstly update it in a way of that reflects both sides, you know, but also it's essentially the push and pull of human relationship, you know, and how you navigate it. I don't want to tell you how we did it because I want people to come to the stage and see that. But it is always about a notion one has of the old world, and the old world is no longer the old world. The old world is absolutely fluid, modern, in fact, quite crazy. India has become an even greater sort of power, more confident in its wealth, and therefore much more discrepancy between the inequities between the rich and the poor. And that is the India of today. That we are reflecting, you know, in a very contemporary fashion in Monsoon Wedding, the musical.
Well, speaking of which, let me get your reaction to this listener's question. I saw the play last weekend and it was very enjoyable with lively songs, dancing and intense colors. I have one little nitpick, though. Why was it necessary to have the F word strewn throughout the lyrics and dialogue? It seemed gratuitous.
Wow. Well, we have actually tempered the F word some since in the last week, because sometimes I do agree that it becomes too easy, sort of fallback, because
like
that's
a trope
how people,
or something in
like
terms
people
of,
speak that
yes.
way, and
mm-hmm.
it's too easy to always appropriate it. But, you know, I would say that the vocabulary is lively, both in English and in Hindi. We use both in the play, and that is kind of how we speak, you know. So I have to, thank you for calling out on that, but also knowing that it kind of reflects the color, whether it is good or bad, you know. But there'll be less F words when you come next week, my dear.
You talk about Punjabi people, and you talk about how they're loud and you know, partiers and boisterous. Do you ever worry about falling into cliches and not stressing the overly stressing the cliche that people?
Of course, make? I mean,
how do you navigate that?
Well, a couple of rules that I follow. One is that I never pander. I never seek to explain who we are as if we were objects or some exotic other beings, you know. That's something I'm very careful and strong about, because I believe that if we reveal ourselves with all warts and complexity and fun and whatever it is, if we reveal ourselves with that particularity, that really it becomes resonant in its truth, and people, you know, trust it and actually begin to see themselves in it. That is always my intention. But apart from not wanting to pander, I am careful, as are my collaborators, about not sinking ever into caricature. That's just, it's in the direction, it's very, very particularly in the writing. And in this case of Monsoon Wedding, the musical, it's also very much in our music. You know, our music is strongly with an Indian pulse, you know, an Indian pulse that is ancient, based on rag, but also with the pulse of Bollywood pop. You know, it is who we are at this moment. And in having the actors, you know, sing and perform in that way of being grounded in a New Delhi of now, it's very authentic, I should say. It's very honest, you know. So when people recognize that familiarity with the real, then it lets go. Then they trust us, you know. And you know, we are not in Monsoon Wedding, the musical, we are not twice removed from any culture. The creators of the musical are very much have their feet and their hearts resolutely in India, but also in the New York of now, you know. So we are all very familiar with both sides of the world, and that is what we've tried to create in the truth of Monsoon Wedding.
We're talking with filmmaker Meera Nair, and if you want to join the conversation, that number is 866-733-6786. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us at KQED Forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org or post your comments on our website. Let's hear from Stephen in San Francisco. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, good morning. I'm a huge fan of Ms. Nair. I went to Uganda 40 years ago as a bright-eyed teenager, and it kind of shaped my character. It was an amazing experience. I spent 2 months there. I had no money. I left to go back to Nairobi on the day of the Entebbe raid. I was on a train. I'm wondering what life is like in Kampala these days and in the country. Hmm. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Stephen.
Well, I think if you saw Queen of Katwe, my last film, which I just made only last year, it would give you a very strong portrait of everyday life in Kampala now, because it is shot in realistic locations with entirely a Ugandan cast, many of whom have never been actors before. Uganda, it's a place of civil liberties. It's a place that it is safe. You know, crime is not at all as much of a fact as it is in our neighboring countries. It is the equator runs through my garden. It's a place of extraordinary fertility and great weather, as you know already. And people, you know, education is prized above all things. So regardless of people not having much in their lives, you will always see a kid in a school uniform, you know, either begging for school fees or going to school in one way or another. These are the things I carry with me, you know, when I think about Uganda, is that kind of dignity of struggle and of educating oneself as being primary factors of life. There are, because the ground is so fertile, people grow their food routinely. So begging is not something that is normal at all in Kampala. And people are, I think it was recently voted the most polite country in the world. And it is it's sort of interesting that courtesy is a huge part of everyday life that you'd never imagine if you hadn't been there. So please come back to Uganda.
Well, Stephen, thanks so much for the call. And let's hear from Ryan in San Leandro. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, good morning. It's such an honor to be part of the program, Ms. Kim. Thank you. Ms. Nair, I'm a huge fan. I actually studied Monsoon Wedding in college, and I think back on it fondly. And I was just calling to ask you how you felt that your overarching directorial style and your writing has changed over time. I was also deeply moved by the namesake, and that, you know, had its own differences from Monsoon Wedding. So I would love your comments on that.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you so much. You know, in terms of my own directorial style, I like to not ever repeat myself. So I like the adrenaline of not stepping in the same river twice, you know, of doing new things each time. So that creates a kind of adrenaline and fire that keeps me going and that keeps me, I hope, humble as I go through it. And that's why actually, it's such an amazing day for me today, because it's the opening night of this musical of Monsoon Wedding that it has literally, without exaggeration, taken me 10 years to engineer, making this musical with extraordinary collaborators over these literally a decade from my initial film to the stage. But it's also part of making something new, you know, making something that I haven't done before, and being as much as, you know, being strong about what I do know, but humble about what I don't know, and always, really always working with people who take me further. Now that I'm older and I've done a fair amount, I just want to, in my future work, do things continually that I have not done before. But take, of course, the assurance of knowing the mediums with me, but never sinking into the complacence of the known.
In Salaam Bombay, which was sort of the first film where people say you really came out onto the scene, you cast, it was about a street child, essentially, and you cast real street children in that. What is your approach to casting?
Well, I think casting is at the core of every piece of work in drama, and I have to kind of fall in love with my actors, and many of them are not actors. You know, many of them are just people whom in whom I see the potential.
What do you look for?
It's different as per each role. I mean, with Monsoon Wedding, the film, it was made on a song and a prayer. It was a $1 million film, very low budget, without any expectations. And so many people that I cast never showed up to work. Seriously, they just didn't come. So I would have to literally go out in the street and pick and people like that I might have come upon, without exaggeration. So there was a comic role of Shashi Aunty, which was played by a woman who didn't want to come. And I literally took a walk in the morning in my garden in the community where I lived in Delhi, and met and saw this woman, you know, large woman in a sari and sneakers. And I started talking to her and I found her very funny. Just her comic timing was superb, just in the way she spoke. And I said, would you like to audition? And she started reading for me and I cast her. And she was so extraordinary that she quickly moved to Bombay and now has become the kind of funny auntie in several Bollywood movies. I don't know. You know, I react. I am a student of life, you know, and I'm a student of people. Even actually the same role, Shashi Aunty on stage in the musical, is played by my childhood dearest friend, Monsoon Bissell, who is not an actor. She's just someone who has such heart and such comedy and such a great singing voice and has entertained me for all my life with her warmth and her empathy and comic timing. That I said, Monsoon, will you consider an acting, you know, role? And totally surprised. She's a trained psychologist. She has nothing to do with the theater. And there she is, blazing on the Berkeley Repertory stage, very much the heart of our play. So I'm like that, you know. And I also love to cast unknown, first-time non-actors opposite legendary actors, like, say, Denzel Washington in Mississippi Masala opposite Sarita Chowdhury, who was a girl I saw on a bicycle with a massive hair and superbly intelligent and unvain, and I immediately loved her. And of course, put her through the drill, cast her, auditioned her, did all that. But she was not an actor. She was a student of film and not of acting. And now she's, of course, a lovely actor. But I love also the alchemy that happens between someone who is an experienced, skilled actor and someone who, you know, has sort of the purity of the fresh, of somebody that is just now.
Well, along those lines, this listener wants to know, I just have to ask, what was Denzel like to work with, Denzel Washington?
Well, Denzel was just fresh after his first film. I think Mississippi Masala was one of his first few films. He was not very well known. He won the Oscar for Glory while we were shooting Mississippi Masala. He was just consummate. I mean, he's just consummate as an actor, somebody who's very comfortable in his bones in front of the camera. And I remember having to push him in the romantic scenes because I myself was making Mississippi Masala in a stupor of love. I had just fallen in love for the first time and I knew what that felt like. And I wanted to create that feeling, that sort of weak-kneed stupor, you know, in between Denzel's character and Sarita's character. And, you know, and I had to really, I was an unknown. I had made one film before and I was, you know, he was suddenly an Oscar winner. And I had to drum up the courage in myself to talk to him about, you know, giving me what I needed in the love stuff. And the way I got to Denzel, and he still laughs about it now, is I said, you know, Denzel, you're doing everything really cool. You're an industrious son. You're a good brother. You're doing all this. But when you're, you know, in the love stuff, as I used to call it, you've got to make me feel this way. And I'm telling you, Denzel, you know, when you, the women in the audience, if you do what I'm telling you to do, the women in the audience are going to just love you forever. And I think talking marketing really helped, because he said, I got you. And then he did. And even now he says to me, we just were on this director's forum together. He was with Fences and I was with Queen of Katwe at the Hollywood Reporter just a few months ago. And he still says to me that his performance in Mississippi Masala is the most, is the time he's been at his most vulnerable. And I love that, because I remember the guts it took to demand that from him.
We're talking with filmmaker Mira Nair, and you're listening to Forum. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. Well, let's take some more calls. Let's hear from Mahendra in Palo Alto. Good morning.
Good morning. Namaste, Miraji. This is Mahendra Mehta from Palo Alto. I'm glad it's a good segue. You were talking about Mississippi Masala. Two of my dearest friends went from Palo Alto to buy a property in Edwards, Mississippi. And you met them and you gave them a cameo role. Do you remember Varsha and Jemini Thakkar?
Of course I do. In fact, Jemini Thakkar was the inspiration for Jemini Patel in Mississippi Masala. The character's name came from getting to know Varsha and Jemini Thakkar.
Yeah. So I plan to come to the reception, and I will probably write to him on a Facebook today, and maybe I'll bring a clip from him. Without having to monopolize, in San Francisco Bay Area, we have three very good, in my opinion, with little exaggeration, at the level of Prithvi in Mumbai, three theater companies. If you are not familiar, I wish you would have chance to meet them. One is Natak.com. The second one is Bay Area Drama Company, BAD. And the third one, with whom I will be coming to the reception next month, is Enact with Vinita. So they do good productions.
Well, Mahendra, thank you so much for that. And it's so great to hear how we're reconnecting you and connecting you with new people and with people that you have worked with in the past. One of the things that we talked about earlier was in terms of how women are portrayed and your effort to try to address taboos around women and women's sexuality. How do you think Asian and Asian American actors are progressing in Hollywood? It feels like there are very familiar frustrations, right, with how people of color and particularly Asian actors are treated, and they're often given certain secondary roles or they're whitewashed. Are you seeing improvement in that area?
I am seeing improvement to the extent that I really believe that if we don't tell our own stories seriously, no one else will tell them for us. So if we are expected to, Asian Americans are expected to be in the forefront or taking leading roles or not just, you know, be side little things, then we have to pretty much do it ourselves. You know, no one will write our histories for us. And that's a huge part of my endeavor, even in opening the door on the Broadway stage to you know, not just having the usual white story that is seen and therefore the usual white talent that is explored. We have to, Monsoon Wedding the Musical is, for me, a very important way to remember that we also come from an incredibly deep and ancient tradition of singing and dancing in theater, period, you know. So Hollywood is organizing itself now in a more palpable way. There are also great sort of some role models. If you take Riz Ahmed, who was the lead of Reluctant Fundamentalist, it was his first film on this kind of level of stage. Now he's in Star Wars, you know, now he's in several, and he's using his own being known to speak of representation and to make music that explores these borders that we are, and these boxes that we are so quickly compartmentalized in. So I see some change, but it's minor, and it really has to be about us having the confidence and the and the sort of indomitability of never giving up until we make our presence felt, and our presence felt not with apologies, not with explanations, but with irreverence and with love and with our warts and all, you know, that's what makes us human, and that's what makes us like other people rather than in our own little boxes.
Well, let me see if I can get Jonas in here for a very quick last comment. Jonas in Berkeley.
Hi, my name is Jonas. Just a comment for Mira Neri is I'm an immigrant from Africa, and I just want to say that you're very inspiring. I follow you from Salam Bombay till now. Wow. And every day I cannot help but inspired by you.
Oh,
and I was
Jonas.
A film student once, and I wrote you a letter, but I never sent it because I was afraid of you. But nevertheless, I'm inspired by you.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you called in, Jonas.
And don't be afraid of me, Jonas. I'm right here, living, breathing, faulty human being.
Mira Nair, yes, she is. Filmmaker of Monsoon Wedding and so many great films. Mississippi Masala, Reluctant Fundamentalist, The Namesake, Salaam Bombay. Thank you so much for being here, and congratulations on the musical, now at Berkeley Rep until July 2nd.
Thank you, Mina. You are Mina from Mississippi Masala for me.
I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.